future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
And we are live. Another edition of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George. And as usual, our producer, Josh, with us behind the glass. Got plenty lined up for you guys this morning. You can find me on Twitter at Carlson Radio, Joe at Joe George Radio, and our guy Josh at I Am J Chevy. So like I mentioned, plenty to get into, plenty to dig into today. Astros won again last night. My opinion, one of their best wins of the season. The D-Hop rumors are circling, and we're going to get into all of it. A little NBA Finals chatter as well, because our guy Josh behind the glass is a big Miami Heat fan. And, well, Game 1 did not go exactly as he would have liked. But
tough.
We need to start with our guy Joe, who is, as he termed it, dealing with a little bit of head discomfort, as the Astros would call it.
Yeah, if I was a team player for the Astros right now, I'd be dealing with general discomfort, a.k.a. I'm hungover. What I realized is that after having a kid, you drink less. So when the kid's away and you go out to dinner with your wife and you drink a bottle of wine, and before that you get like five beers with that ex-coworker, you're going to be hurt the next day.
So the kid was away. Joe went out to play.
Yeah, and I'm hurt. I am full discomfort, but I am not Lance McCullers. I am not soft. So I am here. I'm in the lineup. I'm here today.
Oh.
I couldn't leave you alone.
Well, I mean, look, we only get to do like two shows a month here, Joe, because either, well, usually me, at some point is out. So we got to take advantage of these opportunities while we can.
Always.
And, you know, you may have struggled a little bit last night, but you know who did not struggle? The Houston Astros. That 6-2 win over the Angels and Shohei Ohtani was, like I said, one of the best wins they have had so far this season. Shohei Ohtani has two losses this year on his record. You know who's handed him both of those losses? Framber Valdez and the Houston Astros. And Framber just continues to be absolutely sensational. The improvement that this guy continues to make year on year on year, I'm starting to wonder, is there a limit to how good he can be? Because he was just phenomenal again.
No, Framber Valdez is really put himself in a conversation with one of like the elite pitchers in Major League Baseball. And I think going into the season, it was curious how he would be the most affected by the rule changes.
Mm-hmm.
With the shift going away, Framber would have, you know, he would lose Altuve in deep right field. He would lose Peña on the right side, just leaving Breggy on the left side, or as from the batter's view, I guess. But how would that change Framber Valdez, a ground ball pitcher? Like, would more bleeders get through? Would there just be more guys on base? Like what does it mean for Framber? I think it was a really fair question going into the season. And he's overcome all of it. His strikeout numbers are up. Like Framber has been elite. And honestly, I think you would be hard pressed to not have him in the top five of the Cy Young this year. I would be shocked if he doesn't finish top three at the pace that he's going right now.
Yeah, I was about to say he needs to be top three at minimum. I mean, you look at the numbers thus far into the season: 79 innings pitched, 2.17 ERA, 84 strikeouts to 16 walks. I mean, everything about this guy just screams ace. And I don't think really any Astros fans had a serious question about whether he would be able to assume the mantle of being the number one in the Astros rotation after the departure of Justin Verlander this past offseason. But man, oh man, has he just like, he has assumed that role in a way that I don't, like, this has been better than even I could have possibly anticipated thus far into the season. Like, I have been, I can't put it into words how incredible it's been to watch him just, hey, Justin, he was good last year. He was very, very good last year. He has been, no questions asked, a bona fide ace this season.
Yeah, it's so, you know, one thing about the Astros everyone always talks about is how they have overcome all these departures, you know, whether it's, you know, Springer, Correa, all these guys, and it's always been good. You know, you didn't replace Springer right away with an elite level talent. It took a while for Kyle Tucker to get there. Carlos Correa leaves. Yes, Jeremy Peña won a Gold Glove and obviously World Series and ALCS MVP, but he's not Correa just yet. He could be one day for sure. But with Framber, the Astros have gone from, you know, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Framber Valdez like throughout this time period, and they've had one of the best pitchers in baseball every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And Framber is right there with those guys. Like, he makes every single piece of letting Garrett Cole walk a couple years ago, letting Justin Verlander walk last year. It just validates all of that, because he is the guy that when the Astros are struggling, he's your stopper. Like, he is the guy. We've already seen it a couple times this season when they're not playing their best baseball. After they swept the A's last week and they lost, what, 2 of 3, you know, Framber Valdez goes out there and he completely turns everything around. He shuts down the opposing team. Like, he is 110% the ace of the staff, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I am shocked looking at these AL Cy Young odds right now. He's like 8th.
That's ridiculous. That's absurd.
I mean, and I don't know. I'm probably going to jump in on this today, because some of these, like, now these are the official ones, which obviously Texas sucks, so we can't legally bet on these. We have to go to the offshore sites. But they've got him at plus 1,600 DraftKings. They've got him as the 8th pitcher, as the 8th best odds to win the Cy Young. There's no way that's the case.
I just can't believe that. And to me, what arguably might be the most impressive part of all of it, after everything we've just said, is the fact that he consistently raises his game in the moment that the Astros need it most.
Yeah.
How many times this season already have we seen, hey, the Astros' bullpen has been a little bit taxed over the last week or so. They're going to need Framber to go deep. What does he do? He throws a complete game. Last night, shoves for 7 innings. Every single time the Astros need Framber to step up to the plate, it seems like he's capable of doing so. In the playoffs last season, every time that he needed to raise his game to meet the occasion, he did it. And I don't know what more you can say about the guy.
Yeah, he really has just, you know, put this team in a position to succeed long term. And what it sucks a little bit about Framber, but also not, is, you know, when you look at a guy like Justin Verlander, is Fromber's what, 29? Like, he's not super young. So it's, his career is going to be a little bit shorter, you know, getting up to the big leagues when he did. And it's funny, he's not even the oldest starter in the rotation anymore. Ronel Blanco is. Framber is just, he's everything this team needs. And it's the reason why I think, even though when the offense is struggling, it's not at its peak. You know, I know, you know, Dexter Fowler and Dontrelle Willis on Fox this week said they didn't believe in the Astros' chances to win a World Series as much right now. One of the reasons why they still have the best chance to win the World Series is because if you go into a playoff series, and whether it's 5, 3, 5, 7 games, whatever it is, with Framber Valdez on the mound getting multiple starts in a playoff series, he just puts the Astros at such an advantage. We saw it last year at game 2 of the World Series after JV like dumped the bet. Framber came through and helped get the Astros back on track and really put them on that path to beating the Phillies last year. He's just that kind of guy. So you honestly, you can't ask for more with what he is. He's elite. Like, he's very, very elite.
There's nothing more you can say about it. 713-780-3776 if you want to get in on the conversation. Now, switching things over to the other side, looking at the lineup, do you think this is the lineup that we're going to see for the majority of the rest of the season, assuming that guys remain healthy? Because I've really liked what I've seen. We talked about it. It sort of debuted ahead of our show
last
Saturday.
Yeah.
And really loved what I've seen from that lineup for the majority of the past week or so. For me, at least, this is the sort of lineup that I want to see some iteration, some form of it for the remainder of the season. Obviously, tonight, this afternoon, Mauricio Dubon is filling in for Jose Altuve, who's getting another day off. But I think this is the lineup that the Astros should be using moving forward.
100%. It is the best lineup that Dusty Baker has put together so far this season, just the general construction of it, with Altuve leading off, Peña at the two-hole, and then going Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu. Abreu's looked the most comfortable, you know, since this lineup has been put together. He really has been, you know, a different player the last, you know, 10, 15 days, as is Alex Bregman. And you know, when you look at this lineup construction, it just seems to work. And part of it's, you know, the Astros got this, you know, being this comfortability with it. You know, and Dusty Baker, you know, we talked about how last year he would just, you know, take a guy out of the lineup and then just replace that replacement player in the same exact spot and not adjust it. But maybe he's right about that, because, you know, now in these new spots, these guys seem to be more comfortable with things are. And today's lineup looks very different, obviously, without Altuve and Tucker getting the day off. So your 3-4-5 is Alvarez, Bregman, Abreu. Very different. But, you know, you feel okay about that right now, even though Tucker's out of the lineup. And Abreu's doing okay. It's not great. But you already won the series. So, but this should be the lineup going forward. I frankly, even if Jose Abreu were to turn it around to, like, an elite level, if Michael Brantley were to come back, I think right now, as the lineup is constructed, it's your best lineup. And that includes a better Abreu and a healthy Michael Brantley, if that ever exists. Jeremy Pena in the two-hole, it just works.
He thrives there, man.
It's so dumb.
Baseball players are such mental creatures sometimes. And for whatever reason, there are small things like where they're hitting in the lineup that for whatever reason, they feel most comfortable in those positions. And for whatever reason, Jeremy Pena clearly feels more comfortable hitting number two. I can't explain it. You can't. Nobody in the world can explain to me, why does Jeremy Pena hit like 50 points higher hitting second in the order versus anywhere else?
And I know there's a little bit of it. And look, maybe it's a lot of it. It's the fact that Alvarez is behind him. So it's, look, Jeremy Pena's biggest weakness. Oh, it is a four-game set. They have not won the series yet. Thank you. Thank you, Waka Flocka Bus.
Joe's just assuming they're going to win today.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. They're going to win today. Come on. They're going to sweep the Angels. It's Jeremy Pena's biggest weakness is so easy to figure out. He chases everything. It is like his number one weakness. But you don't want to give a free pass to a guy with Yordan Alvarez coming up. So even though he swings at all these sliders and everything outside the zone, he's going to see more fastballs with Alvarez because you don't want him to stop. If he stops swinging and just starts walking, you're giving a guy a free path to be on base with Alvarez behind him. So he's seeing more fastballs at the two spot. And so maybe that is a huge part of it. But a lot of it's just mental. Like he's just better in the two hole.
He takes better at bats. I could not explain it. Like I think that what you mentioned there probably plays a pretty key role in the fact that he's getting more pitches to hit with the caliber of hitters that are behind him versus when he was lower down in the lineup. But he just looks more comfortable up there. He takes better at bats. And when he's not being faced with that just massive off-speed stuff on a very consistent basis and he gets a couple extra fastballs to mash, he mashes them. And he's doing a really fantastic job. You mentioned earlier on in the segment that Alex Bregman is starting to turn things around. Last 3 weeks or so, he's looked absolutely fantastic at the plate. We're going to get into Alex Bregman's turnaround and just what it means for the Astros next. You're listening to The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible, and that's why I love these guys. Knuckleheads.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You heard it from that big voice guy there. This is The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George alongside you for the next hour and, I guess now, 44 minutes up until 2 p.m. And before the break, talking a little Stros, and going to keep that conversation rolling here. Alex Bregman has been absolutely sensational over the past 3 weeks. Like, maybe I'm overcooking it a little bit. He hasn't been quite MVP Alex Bregman, but he's been pretty damn close to it. He's been really, really good, slashing over 300, over 360 on base, slugging nearly 500. Like, he has been legitimately an excellent ball player over the past 3 weeks or so, and coming into May 8th, this was the cutoff point that Chandler Rome put out in an article yesterday. He was hitting just 195, and he was seemingly lost at the plate. He had maybe 1 week of actual good baseball up to that point in the season, and ever since then, it feels like he's really started to figure things out. And something we talked about last week was, in order for this Astros team and really this offense to come together and perform like they need to for the team to get where they want to go to, it's going to take the corner infielders, Alex Bregman and Jose Abreu, getting to a level that is at least good to decent play. And Alex Bregman has done more than that recently, and it's been a really big part of how the Astros have really surged over the past few weeks.
Yeah, he's got a 9-game hitting streak going right now, hitting 322 in those games. And like you said, I mean, look, raising your batting average 50 points in less than a month.
It's no small feat.
It's not. Especially with, he was lost. Like he wasn't Alex Bregman. And, you know, one thing Jeremy has kind of been saying on the Killer Bees that I really agree with is base hit Bregman is like what he needs to be.
100%.
Don't worry about the pop. Like, he has 3 home runs in this last 9-game stretch, yes, but just get on base. Like, you've got the best eye on the team. So focus on getting on base. Like he knows the strike zone better than pretty much everyone, and honestly, maybe in the league. Alex Bregman has an incredible eye. He know most of the time, if he looks back at an umpire because he's upset with a call, Bregman's right like 90% of the time.
The umpire oftentimes gets it wrong.
Yeah.
Bregman knows the zone better than just about anybody else out there, and that's a fantastic point you bring up. Like, Bregman himself has said it. He's just trying to do less at the plate, mm-hmm. and I think that's the best version that we're going to see of him moving forward. He's got enough pop in his bat, at least at home, where he's going to hit a few cheapies out in the Crawford boxes. It's what he does. It's what he did in his MVP season. And if he's more focused on continuing to put the ball in play with some of these like little soft serve liners out in the outfield, he had another RBI single last night. I feel like he's had a ton of those over the last 4 or 5 games. He's going to be a much more impactful hitter just because he doesn't need to be the big power bat in the Astros lineup anymore. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, there was more of a need for him to be one of the big boppers, so to speak, in the lineup. But with Yordan and Kyle Tucker surrounding him, he doesn't need to be that anymore. Get on base for these other guys to keep the train moving and let them drive you in.
Exactly. If you have Alvarez on first because he gets walked or just a single, if you can follow that up with a single and then you put Kyle Tucker to the plate, you can't ask for more. Like, that's what this lineup needs to be doing. It's just getting these guys on base as much as possible because the offense hasn't been its best. If you do want to make an argument that the Astros are not going to go to the World Series this year or maybe not even win the division, it's health and just the quality of the offense so far. But what you've gotten from the team, and specifically Alex Bregman over the last 2 weeks, shows that this team still has the ability to have a World Series level roster without having to make any additions. And you need this going forward, because if you get to the trade deadline, I don't understand or really see a path to adding a bat to the lineup, because you're going to be hopeful of Michael Brantley. You're going to be, look, the Angels are rolling out 2 guys that got drafted last year already. So the idea that you can't bring up Drew Gilbert anymore because of his age and when he was drafted, I think is false. Now, he is dealing with discomfort right now.
Oh, of course.
But they're playing him, which is surprising. He's still DHing, even though he's dealing with discomfort, like very anti-normal Astros. So Drew Gilbert, officially not soft, Jeremy's favorite word. But you have options. But left field is really the only position where you can acquire a bat at the deadline, and it makes logical sense. I guess you could say center field, too. Like, left field and center, it just seems unlikely. You're not going to get a new first baseman. And if Alex was as bad as he was before, you're not going to get a new third baseman. So, like, if your corner infielders aren't good, you're just kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And now with Alex going to, like, the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid, just get on base, just go for base hits, and then when there's something there, take advantage of it, it's really can drive this offense in a different way. And now that he's farther down in the order, with the way what we were talking about with Peña, Altuve's hitting over 300 since he came back. Like, he looks like he hasn't missed a beat, which is just incredible. With Altuve, Peña, Alvarez, Bregman's going to have more opportunities to just keep it simple, get a base hit, get a guy home. They're going to be there for him.
Yeah, and like you just mentioned there with Peña, for whatever reason, I think that this lineup with Bregman hitting fourth just works better for him.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the pitch selection that he's getting or what it might be, but Bregman hitting fourth, and we know that Dusty's going to rotate left, right, left, right. You know, that's what's going to happen. It's how it's going to be. It works for Bregman. It just really does. It's worked for him in this spot. Now, Bregman is turning things around. Jose Abreu, not so much. I feel like I'm sort of just clinging on to any possible sign of life at this point.
Sure.
And the stats may not bear it out necessarily, but I feel like his at-bats have looked better over the last week or two.
I think he's turning it around. Like, because
so I thought so, too, and then I looked it up, and he's still batting like 180 over the past like 15 games.
I know, but it looks different. Yeah. It's really the only way. It's an eye test thing. I mean, it's funny. We were here last week. Willie was not, who apparently is not in the chat so far today. Richard Willie. we were going back and forth like all last show, and I said on the show, I would take any wager you want of when Jose Abreu will hit a home run, and then he went deep the next day.
We had a bet on the wheelhouse that Jose Altuve was going to go deep ahead of Jose Abreu. Now, it happened by a single inning,
yeah,
but you can catch that bet. And it's just been so frustrating to watch it because you know how it is with off-season signings. There was so much hype around Jose Abreu, and we can all be disappointed with how it's played out so far, but there's not a single Astros fan walking the face of the earth that I think can legitimately say they expected this from Jose Abreu.
No, yeah.
Everyone was totally in favor of it. And so I think that there's a general consensus around the team and around the organization, around the fan base, that they all really, really want him to succeed. And Dana Brown was on with MLB Network just yesterday. And he was talking about Jose Abreu and how he thinks that he's potentially starting to turn things around.
Yeah, so he's starting to hit the ball a little harder right now. At the end of the day, I think, if you look on the back of his baseball card, this guy's done a good job his entire career. You know, he's over an 800 OPS. He's got power. And I think he's starting to feel it a little bit. He's been hitting the ball a lot harder. And as everyone knows, his makeup is really good. He's a good person, good teammate. And so we're excited about, what he's been doing of late.
And so that sort of alludes to what we were talking about just there, where the contact he's making, even though some of it is going for outs,
yep,
it's more solid contact than we've seen in the past. And it's more in the vein of some of the slow starts he had in the past where he was making solid contact, it was just going for outs, and then those outs eventually turned into base hits. That's the hope that's what's going to happen here. But I will tell you, I hate hearing the back of the baseball card.
Because Baggy said that too, right?
That's word for word what Jeff Bagwell said a couple of weeks ago.
That's just the line?
I really hope not, man.
I mean, it's two people have said it. Back of the baseball card. I mean, that's not a new thing that people try to use when you have an older player that's struggling, especially when the drop-off is as severe as it's been. Because even a guy like Miguel Cabrera, who dealt with a lot more injuries, his drop-off was not like this. He didn't just like wake up one day and fall off a cliff. And that's what it kind of feels like Jose Abreu has done. And it's, first of all, it is impossible to not root for this guy. Like that home run, the smile, the sprint around the base, the slide into the dugout, like the excitement from his teammates. You can just tell that he is a beloved figure in this clubhouse already.
Absolutely.
He is impossible not to root for.
And if you didn't like that, you don't like baseball, period. Like, that was just such a moment of, like, pure joy and happiness that if you didn't enjoy seeing that happen and how clearly relieved he was and the rest of the team felt for him, like, and the A's, you know, hitting him in his next at bat.
All right, look, okay, that's fine. Whatever. I get it. You're going to sprint around the base like that and celebrate the way you did. You're probably going to get plunked. But, dude, could you imagine being the Oakland A's pitcher and then, like, looking to your left and you see Yordan Alvarez, the way he was staring at him? I was like, oh, he's going to kill him. Like, you almost cannot start a fight with the Houston Astros anymore. Because if you do, you have to understand, if you throw at an Astros pitcher and the bench is clear, Yordan Alvarez is coming out of there. Probably, like, the number one guy, like, I don't want to see in a fight in all of baseball. I don't know if you could give me a name that, like, would top that list of guys, like, I don't want to see my teammates throw down with.
Yordan's very, very high up. My only concern would be, given his health issues in the past, let's keep Yordan away from the scrum, please.
Yeah, those hands are bad. I don't need to see you throwing shots.
Yeah, let's keep Yordan away from throwing punches. Michael Brantley also started taking swings apparently this week. Your hope, and you have any hope whatsoever that he's going to make some sort of impact the back half of the season?
I am viewing Michael Brantley and Lance McCullers in the I expect literally nothing, and if you get even a little something, awesome. I hope with Brantley, he can come back around the All-Star break. You know, if he's swinging off a tee again, that hopefully the inflammation is just temporary and he'll be able to get back on track. He was hitting the ball really well in Sugar Land. Really, really well. And, you know, look, if Abreu doesn't really turn it around, Brantley can be part of your solution.
Go play first base.
He can play some first base for you, and you can alleviate Abreu a couple days here and there. So, like, if he isn't really turning around, if, you know, all these guys are wrong about the back of his baseball card and what a good player he was versus what he is now, like, Michael Brantley could alleviate that. So I hope we'll see Michael Brantley back this year. I think it's unwise to expect it at this point.
Yeah, that's where I am with Lance as well. You mentioned it.
Lance.
Anything you get at this point is just bonus from either of those guys.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but it's the situation the Astros have placed themselves in with the business that they did this offseason. He's Joe George. I am Andrew Carlson. We've got our boy Josh behind the glass. Coming up next, DeAndre Hopkins to the Houston Texans rumors have continued to pick up some steam over the past week or so. Would you be in favor of a D-Hop return, and what to make of all the latest reports? You want to get in on the conversation, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. DeAndre Hopkins to the Texans, coming up next.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
Yeah, I don't know. Do not know who led us up here, but we are here. This is the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George alongside you guys until 2. So we're going to get to the DeAndre Hopkins rumors to the Houston Texans in just a second. But during the break, we were chatting a little bit, Joe.
I heard that you were trying out for the new Fast and the Furious.
It's not quite what happened. So we had live broadcast out at Kima from 7 to 7 at T-Box, Texas. Fantastic time if you missed it, as the kickoff of our summer circuit yesterday. And yeah, on my way out to relieve RJ, which I felt really bad about this, by the way, because I told RJ, hey, I'm going to get there early because he needed to leave his shift just slightly early to get back to the station and
to drop off the promo van. Yeah.
And so I was on track to get there at 11:45 as he had asked to relieve him and, you know, take over the last shift of engineering the Paul Gallant experience. And well, things did not quite go to plan for me. Is, you know, I was 10 minutes out from T-Box, Texas, in the lovely streets of Kima or Galveston. I'm not entirely sure what it would be. Maybe Galveston, I guess. And, well, I got pulled over, Joe.
Yeah.
You know how there's that sinking feeling when you see the lights go, woo, in the background?
Yep.
Yeah. Those lights turned on, pulled over in the side street, and, well, there went that for me getting there early for RJ.
Yeah. So, did you get a ticket?
Did not get a ticket.
Really?
I pulled the old smile and wave. And so apparently, look, was I speeding on the way out there? Hand over my heart. Absolutely, yes. I mean,
yeah.
This is Houston. Everybody speeds, you know.
Definitely.
Especially when you're trying to get out to the beach down south. So, you know, I was going a little fast on the way out there, but this had nothing to do with that. It was the fact that my vehicle registration is a little late. So my registration expired in February, so I've got a 223 on the windshield in the little sticker in the bottom corner, and we are currently in June.
I'm in January.
Oh, so you're even worse. Perfect. Perfect. You're even worse. So
yeah.
I don't know how this cop spotted it, because he didn't pull me over for any violations. He just said, "Hey, son, you know, your registration there is a little old."
Really?
Yeah. So it was stop and go traffic for probably about half a mile, and I was either behind or to the side of this cop car for basically a half mile. And my guess is, while he was looking around during, you know, all these stop and goes throughout that half mile, he saw that my registration was 4 months out of date.
Yikes.
And, you know, I was able to get out of it. I'm sure you've heard that they passed legislation.
Yeah, so, but when, and that kicks in
2025, as he let me know.
Oh.
So he didn't know either, and that was my out. So I told this, officer.
I thought it kicked in September.
That's what I was hoping. So
were you going to try just to wait till September?
That was my plan.
That's what I thought too.
And that's what I told this lovely officer. I told him, Officer Salazar, sir, I appreciate. He's like, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I have not gotten my registration yet. I heard they passed this legislation where you're not going to have to get your car inspected anymore.
Yeah,
you're just going to have to, you know, mail your information in, and they'll mail you back your registration and you'll be good to go. And I was hoping to just wait it out until that was legal and I wouldn't have to go, you know, get my car inspected. He's like, oh, I heard about that too, but let me still get your license and insurance, please. And got my license, went back, and I think he made a call to the office or something because he came back and gave me a very detailed explanation as to why I will need to go get my car inspected because that legislation is not going to impact us anytime soon.
Oh, that sucks. I thought it was September, so I was just going to push it. I was going to do the same exact
thing. That was my exact plan, was just to wait until I could actually just mail it in, not have to go get my car inspected because it's, you know what, 20 or 30 minutes if you don't have any other cars in line, but it's a pain in the ass. Like, you don't want to deal with it.
You know what's funny? This will be the first time I ever do it because when I moved to Houston, I bought or just like took my parents' car from Illinois, and but it was still their car. We never like changed it. I didn't do a full purchase. I just helped pay for it a little bit, so I still had Illinois plates. So I never had to do the Texas inspection because the car was registered in Illinois. Not here. So this is technically the first time I'm supposed to do it, and I'm 5 months late, 6 months late.
Well done.
I mean, look, it's my, now my wife's is overdue and like by like a month. And look, man, I got a kid. I got a full-time job. Like, I don't got time for this. This is stupid.
That's the thing. It's like you want to spend your weekend doing other things, not sitting at, you know, like a five-minute oil change or a Jiffy Lube getting your car inspected.
Am I scared that they're going to also tell me that, like, I have problems with my car and I'm going to have to, like, pay a boatload of money to get them fixed? Yes.
See, and that's the other aspect of this whole inspection ordeal is the fact that you've got so many people who they're just going to mechanics or whatever else that they know they're going to pass their car, whatever issues it has. Oh, your brake pads don't actually exist? No worries.
Yeah.
We're going to pass you on the inspection. So you'll be able to find. I know of a couple in Houston you'll be able to find.
Well, see, my only concern is actually the brakes. My brakes are fine. They sound good 90% of the time. The only time they don't is when I leave this building, that when I go down that straight incline ramp.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear them squealing. It's like the only time, because like literally, so like you go out, and as you get over this ledge, it looks like a straight roller coaster drop. When I worked here the first time from 2015 to 2018, it was only a down. And now people go up it, and I think those people are insane. Because you can't see as you're coming up over the top.
That's why you got to take it slow, man. You go up that ramp every day.
I go the other side most of the time. Unless I'm in a rush. But also, to be frank, like, the last time I tried to go up it, I got cut off by a coworker.
Who will remain nameless?
No, Greg Frank. he cut me off. I don't even know if he knows that he's here, so he might have just heard that for the first time. Or he might be listening. He cut me off one time. It was okay. I found out it was the same because I saw the Eagles stickers in the back. But, you know, it happened, so I just went the other way and, you know, went about my day. But, yeah. So we need to get that replaced.
Yeah, well, you'll get the brakes replaced eventually. It'll work out.
How much does it cost?
Probably more than you want.
No, the inspection.
The inspection, it's like $17.80. It's very cheap. Like,
great.
It's really, it's more of a time sink than anything else. It's not an actual issue.
All right. I guess we should get that done. Yeah, well, I still can't believe you got pulled over for that.
Oh, no, me neither.
I wonder if they changed the colors.
No, I think that like it was just because of the fact that I was next to him for such an extended period of time. That he was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to pull this guy over because this expired registration has been sitting in the back of my rear view for the past, you know, 5 minutes while we've been sitting in stop and go traffic.
Yeah, you just kind of got screwed.
Yeah, it was just the timing of everything. Now, after that long detour that we just took to get to these DeAndre Hopkins rumors, to give people a summary of what's been going on with D-Hop over the past, week and a half, 2 weeks now that we've really seen these rumors circulate. So, a summary of everything that's been going on. According to the Houston Chronicle, Brooks Grabina, he reported that Hopkins would be interested in potentially returning to the Texans. Now, from The Athletic, we've heard that Buffalo is likely out financially because D-Hop is not willing to sacrifice a payday to play with top-end quarterback talent.
Sure.
Now, we've also heard from the always reliable Josina Anderson, that Cleveland is not interested in additional wideouts, and it would have to take a significant change in circumstances to go for DeAndre Hopkins. And last but not least, from the equally reliable Aaron Wilson, a reunion with Watson in Cleveland is apparently likely. So that's a summary of sort of where we're standing right now on the reporting and everything that we've heard. Yeah. Look, personally, I'm not buying that he chooses the Texans, but shoot, if he wants to be here, I'm all in.
Well, it's interesting when they talk about like money, Texans got none.
They don't, but so are you familiar with the account Texans Cap on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
He works some absolute magic with the
cap. They can do a bunch of stuff.
I mean, so they've got so much cap space next year that they can push so much other crap essentially down the road.
Yeah, they have like $124 million in cap space.
They can open up the cap space this year if they really wanted to. And he worked it out so they could get Hopkins a contract that in year one was extremely similar to what Odell Beckham is going to be getting with the Baltimore Ravens this year. Now, look, if the Texans money whip D-Hop, I think that there's a decent chance that he's here. It's all a question of, is that something the Texans actually want to do?
I think they should. I mean, if you would have known, if he was available before the offseason, you would have taken DeAndre Hopkins over Robert Woods.
Like 100%.
Like, you would have
no question.
Now, does it make sense to have Robert Woods and DeAndre Hopkins on this roster? I don't honestly think so. You can make it work, just because I think they kind of are going to do similar things. Robert Woods probably more of a blocker, you know, at times for in the run game and on screen passes. If he's interested in coming back here, I think it would be a great idea, because the one thing we've seen work really well in the NFL is that you're seeing quarterbacks play mediocre or kind of below average in their first couple years in the NFL. And then the team acquires an elite wide receiver. And now, is Hopkins what he was when he was here last time? Absolutely not. But like, you see a team, you know, get an elite wide receiver and things change. You look at the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen was pretty bad. Okay, and then they traded for Stephon Diggs. He became elite right away. Jalen Hurts this last year with A.J. Brown. Tua this last year with Tyreek Hill. Like, having that elite or superbly talented wide receiver for a young quarterback is huge. And in a room of Tank Dell, Mechie, Hopkins, Woods, Dalton Schultz at tight end, you are setting your quarterback up for success with the offensive line that you have. Damian Pierce. Yeah, if he wants to come back, you pay that man whatever he wants, because getting a number one wide receiver has to be your main priority over the next two seasons. Like, I firmly believe they should be opening up a big bag of money next offseason for T. Higgins, and Hopkins doesn't stop you from doing that. So get him now. Maybe it's a one-year, you know, expensive prove-it deal. But they should be all over this.
100%. Honestly. 100%. And for me, maybe it's not whatever he wants, but if you have to pay the bad team tax and pay more than any other team would be willing to offer him in order to get him to Houston, I think that's an investment worth making. Just because of the fact that the whole point of this upcoming season is, at least in my opinion, to put C.J. Stroud in the best position to succeed and be your franchise quarterback moving forward. That is the most important outcome of this next upcoming year for the Texans. Is C.J. Stroud the guy that we can build around moving forward as our quarterback and as our franchise leader? And bringing in DeAndre Hopkins puts him in the position to where I believe, at least, that he would be in a much better spot to do that. He's Joe George. I'm Andrew Carlson. The DeAndre Hopkins conversation is going to continue. If he does choose the Texans, just how much would it really change things for the team? I think I'm starting to drink Cody Stutes Kool-Aid a little bit. I'm going to explain next. This is the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Bullpen rolling along here, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with you until 2 this afternoon. I got Josh behind the glass. Want to get in on the action, whatever it is that we might be talking about, you can do so on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. That works for the text line as well, although I'm not entirely sure that we have access to it at this exact moment in time. So
no, I'll try to resend this push notification here.
Hopefully we will acquire that before the end of the show. You can also hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Carlson Radio. My guy Joe is at Joe George Radio. Josh behind the glass at I Am J Chevy. So we're going to continue the DeAndre Hopkins discussion and his potential return to Houston in just a moment. But some rather unfortunate news coming from one Brian McTaggart in the back end of the last segment. So we said that Jose Altuve was out for a day off earlier in the show. Unfortunately, that's not quite the case. He's getting a precautionary day off because he felt something in his oblique during an awkward swing yesterday and is being held out today. They're not getting an MRI, so clearly they don't think it's that serious. But obviously not the news you wanted to hear after the start Altuve had had coming back from the IL.
Yeah, he just had a day off. Was it on Wednesday?
That's the one reason I thought it was a little strange that he was off today.
Yeah, look, and you don't love it, obviously. So you hope for the best here, to be honest. Yes, Twitchers, we see you. Stop complaining. But you know, hopefully with Altuve, we see some point like he'll be okay and just be back in the lineup tomorrow, because Dubon was a good story. But to be honest, like, now that he's not playing every day, it just doesn't look the same for him. And some guys can't be, what Alemis Diaz is. You know, Alemis Diaz really was a guy who could play 3 or 4 days, or not play for 3 or 4 days and then be fine. Dubon, he's still good, obviously. It seems like when he's not playing every day, it's not as consistent as it was before, but you still feel okay with where you're at. You just hope that long term, it's not something that's going to hold him out for a while.
Oh, 100%. Altuve has been the shot in the arm that this offense really needed since coming back from the IL, and for whatever reason, Mauricio Dubon, I understand that he was hitting well, but he doesn't have the slugging ability that Jose Altuve does, and the threat that Altuve provided at the top of that lineup. Mauricio Dubon can do a fantastic job filling in, but he's just simply not physically capable of providing what Jose Altuve provides. So hopefully, like the Astros believe, it's a minor issue, it's a precaution, and we'll see Altuve back in the lineup either Sunday or Monday.
Yeah.
So continuing on with the DeAndre Hopkins discussion, I mentioned before the break that I'm sort of sipping the Cody Stutz Steel Blue Kool-Aid a little bit if DeAndre Hopkins comes back to the team. He said that he was going to put a little Stutzy sprinkle. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I am a little bit. I heard about the Stutzy sprinkle.
Yeah, it might be a couple Stutzy sprinkles, actually, on the Texans to win the AFC South if DeAndre Hopkins was in the fold next season. I'm going to be honest with you. After taking a look at it, I think I agree with him.
Really?
If they get DeAndre Hopkins, I genuinely believe that they have a good shot at winning the AFC South. I'm not going to say that they're favorites. The Jaguars are clearly the favorites in the division. But getting DeAndre Hopkins closes that gap pretty massively to me, because I think that the wide receiver core is far and away the weakest link on this Texans offense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's even close, to be honest with you.
For sure, yeah.
And getting DeAndre Hopkins would shore up that weakness to such a degree and give them a security blanket that they so desperately need. That defense is going to be much, much improved this season. I genuinely believe that there's a pretty decent shot. If DeAndre Hopkins comes to Houston, the Texans are back as the kings of Trash Mountain.
I guess I can't say I totally disagree with you, because I do view them currently as a 6 or 7 win team. That when you look at part of it, look, their schedule is cakewalk.
That's it, man.
They play a lot of bad teams. Look, when you have a fourth place schedule, you're going to play bad teams. You should be able to take advantage. Yeah, you didn't catch some breaks with, like, you might play Kyler Murray this year, because, like, he actually might be back. I think everyone was kind of hoping, if you were trying to make the playoffs or have a really good season or a much improved season, you wanted the Cardinals early. But the Texans can be competitive this year. You know, we talk about, like, I know it's a baseball stat more, but, like, wins above replacement. Like, D'Amico Ryans alone improves this team, we think, by a lot over what Lovie Smith and Cully had it. It feels like they're going to be in a much better place organizationally, like with coaching staff. Now, it is concerning that it seems like Burke might be the play caller on defense. I don't love the idea that the Texans go into 2023 with an offensive and defensive coordinator who have never called plays before.
I doubt that Matt Burke is calling plays. I very, very highly. The way that he answered 100%. That question at OTAs was, well, I'm calling the plays right now, but when the first game starts, we'll see. If Burke was calling the plays, I would be willing to bet that he would have come out and said, I'm calling plays.
Yeah, I think they just haven't decided yet. Look, part of it is it is a lot for D'Amico. You know, going back to, like, the Bill O'Brien era, right? It's also like the first thing when you're ready to start talking about a coach getting fired is always, when are they going to give up play calling duties? And I think for some of these coaches, it's almost better to be like the hero of, hey, it didn't work out this year on defense. Matt Burke, you're fired. I'm going to take over the defense again, versus the other way. It's harder to watch your head coach relinquish play calling duties, but I think we are going to see DeMeco do it. So they should be better defensively, right? They've got just more talent. Derek Stingley Jr. looks like a totally different person physically.
He's jacked.
Like, he looks so different, and you hope that he can stay healthy because he's a super talented player. Petrie, year two, like, you've got some skill. I'm not going to say it's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But here's my issue with your Stutzy sprinkle, okay?
We're doing a little more than a sprinkle at this point. This might be a full-fledged bet at this point.
You can get them at some places right now at plus 950 to win the division. If you're going to do it, you should do it right now with a little bit of a smaller sprinkle.
Yeah.
Because as soon as if they sign Hopkins, that's going to jump up pretty high, to be honest. Like, or you're going to lose the value. They're going to be closer to plus 700, plus 650. I would guess at least plus 800.
They would become the clear second favorite in the division, in my opinion, if they get DeAndre Hopkins. Who knows what the Colts are going to be with Anthony Richardson under center. The Titans look like they're going to be a relative mess. Now, who knows? I think Mike Vrabel's a fantastic coach. Derrick Henry, if he, you know, keeps the form that he's had for the majority of the past few seasons, he's going to run roughshod over the Texans a couple of times. But, yeah, man, this division and the schedule in general sets up so nicely for the Texans to exceed expectations this season. And DeAndre Hopkins would only add to my optimism in that.
Yeah, no, there's a chance. It's not impossible. Because really what's going to come down to is CJ.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, for the most part, you want to hear good things. You don't want to hear bad things. It's just OTAs. It doesn't mean everything. But the reports about CJ Stroud taking control, you know, we started a new podcast on the ESPN Houston channel with DJ Bienname and Paul Gallant. And DJ was out at OTAs, and he was talking about how there was just like this one deep pass deep down the field to Robert Woods, I think it was. No, just to Xavier Hutchinson. And, you know, just how comfortable CJ looked and how he's clearly already passed Davis Mills and he's clearly the number one quarterback. All that's great. It doesn't mean a ton to me. You just don't want to be Will Levis right now, who apparently looks like trash in Tennessee. And it's very obvious he's not going to be a good quarterback. That's why Jeremy Branham retired from scouting quarterbacks, because he was wrong. But it doesn't mean everything. But everyone's going to come down. Everything's going to come to CJ Stroud. But Hopkins only makes it easier for him. It's just that safety blanket that you don't really have right now, because Tank Dell is going to be the smallest wide receiver in the NFL this year. John Mechie hasn't played in 2 years, basically, and he's still kind of banged up right now, and you're really just hoping for the best. Robert Woods is a guy who's hurt all the time. Like,
who knows what Nico Collins is? We still haven't seen him at his best because of the situation that the Texans have been in since he was drafted out of Michigan. So it's a lot of question marks at the wide receiver position.
Hopkins just gives you another question mark, I think, but a better question mark.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I mean, he did take roids and miss four games. To be fair.
Dude, it was mystery meat, man.
Once again, Bill O'Brien was right for trading Hopkins.
Okay, now this is where the segment ends, all right? we're cutting this off right here.
That's how I broke the news on the Killer Bees when it happened. I said, breaking news, Jack Easterby was right, DeAndre Hopkins has been cut.
All right, yeah, we're taking this to break. Josh, I can't entertain any more of this Bill O'Brien was right nonsense. We're going to return to the Astros discussion when we come back. The Astros have a legitimate competition in the AL West this year for the first time in God knows how long, and I think the Rangers are going to provide a serious threat for the remainder of the season. Going to gauge our confidence level in the Astros still winning the AL West when we get back. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with you till 2 o'clock on the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down.
ESPN 97.5.